It's been a wretched year. I don't need to recap it. We all lived through it. And a couple of months ago, Basecamp's head of marketing, Andy DeDeRossi, had a work call that had kind of 2020 vibes.
Jason, our CEO, and I had our year check-in. You know, I'd been at Basecamp for a year. And, you know, to be totally honest, it wasn't a fun one. It was a conversation where we both said the results we're getting from our spend and our effort is just not good. All of the other things we do, you know, storytelling and signal versus noise, the blog, building a good product, are dramatically outperforming our marketing efforts. The traffic isn't good. The signups aren't good. We had a mutual conversation where it was like, should we even market anymore? You know, and like on the table was, you know, me just not working at Basecamp. And that, like, I agreed, you know, I was like, I don't want to keep pouring money into ads and sponsorships and stuff that just aren't working. I think we probably talked on the phone for like 3 total hours, maybe even 4 across a couple phone calls. The ideas we came into was like, well, why don't we just flip the script entirely for this amount of money, the mid 6 figures a year? Why don't we just build things that are fun? And after the first one, if it just doesn't stick, you know, then we'll just part ways.
So yeah, we were doing like just more advertising and like podcast ads. And it's like, okay, like this is fine. Like no one was really excited about it. There was just wasn't a lot of energy and enthusiasm.
Adam Stoddard is Basecamp's marketing designer.
So we were really trying to figure out a way to approach it in a very different way that you wouldn't see from a lot of other companies.
Everybody is trying to get through the same door. Everybody is trying to buy ads on the same marketplaces. As more and more companies try to do a predictable thing to grow their company, it gets more and more expensive. The only thing that's going to work here is something that doesn't make sense to most other people.
Welcome to Rework, a podcast by Basecamp about the better way to work and run your business. I'm Waylon Wong.
And I'm Sean Hildner. Today on the show, we talk about what Andy and a small secret team here at Basecamp came up with to get some exposure for Hey, that new email service we launched earlier this year, and maybe have a little fun at the same time. Do you remember fun?
I most certainly do not, but thankfully, we work with people who managed to hang on to a sense of joy and whimsy this year. One of those people is Andy. And after this stressful phone call with Jason, where they conceded that the marketing of Hey was not going well, he came up with something called Hurl.
Hurl is the Hey Email Research Labs.
The thing that Andy invented as a device for these silly email-centric experiments that we're doing. And it's a very fun thing that I really liked when he pitched it because it makes these things bigger than they otherwise would be. It wraps this like world around them and a veneer around them that gives them purpose and not just like a series of one-off things. The conceit is that Hurl is a division of Hey, but they're like the terrible research team that's stuck down in the basement somewhere that everyone forgot about and they don't even realize they're on the payroll anymore. So they like just do their silly experiments that absolutely do not pan out into anything that translates to like something that would involve monetary gain, which is like also the pretext for the way the website is, where it's this old operating system, because that's their like bespoke mainframe from when they first became a thing, and it's just been that ever since because they can't get funding to do anything else.
Now, the story that Adam and Andy created around Hurl might be fictional, but the experiments very much take place in the real world.
When I originally pitched this, I pitched 6 ideas: sending a small satellite into space with a little screen that you could email. We talked about doing like big light installations. We talked about a bunch of different ideas, but what we came to was this has been a hard year. People have lost family members, people have lost jobs, and you know, it's not turning around soon. We built this as a virtual catharsis machine. You know, this is for something that people can, you know, write a message to us, a gripe, something they've lost, and we will burn it on a live stream. So you email dumpsterfire@hey.com with whatever you want, text, or you attach an image, and it will print it out on the live stream, bring it up a conveyor belt, and then it'll dump it into this flaming dumpster that ignites upon printing. You know, once the print gets there, it bursts into flames, burns your email on camera, and then goes out.
In retrospect, it probably would have been a little easier to do one of the other experiments that, well, two things. One, this had to be outdoors, which has its like massive amount of complications because of that. But also like it's slightly more contentious maybe than some of the other experiments just due to the nature of the thing. I mean, it's burning paper. It's not wasteful.
It's a big flaming dumpster. So it had to be outside. You know, I tried figuring out a bunch of ways to bring it indoors because we're in Detroit and it is wintertime. And so I wanted it to be outside, but it had to be protected from the elements. So you have one thing that's trying to, you know, make a bunch of heat. And then you have something else that needs to be protected, all the electronics and the printer. The solution that I came to was a shipping container, you know, like a normal shipping container that you've seen stuff get shipped in on boats or now they're making, you know, coffee shops and restaurants out of. This whole thing is sitting outside in the side lot of my company, the Detroit Bus Company. You know, I still, you know, own this small bus company in Detroit. We've had to park our operations because of COVID. So we aren't using the facility for anything right now.
We're going to come back to how Andy sourced all the parts of this contraption. But first, let's go deep into the guts of this thing.
I knew this was going to be a pokey, difficult project. You know, there isn't like a Stack Overflow page you can pull up that's going to solve this for you. You know, we actually had to like create and invent some stuff here. It is an iceberg of complexity.
At the beginning of the last cycle, so about 6 weeks ago, I get a ping from him out of nowhere. It's like, hey, you want to be involved in a project? It's Secret Squirrel. And I'm like, of course. I mean, I don't even know anything about it, but of course.
Nathan is a systems administrator on Basecamp's technical operations team.
When I thought about the right person for this project, I needed someone who had a broad array of skills, you know, like a good problem solver, but also like enough of a weirdo to go at this thing, you know? And Nathan has such a broad array of interests and is like also kind of a meme lord. So like all of these things combined equaled the perfect hurl programmer.
He kind of started walking through the idea and I'm like, I can't describe how happy I was that we were doing something like this. It was just such a fun project. Basically, they said we need a way to be able to receive email and then do something with it and then burn it. And we need you to figure out the do something part. Our first run was, well, let's just create a Hey account and we'll just send the email into Hey. And then we realized that that means that we would be storing and keeping every single email from every person that emailed us in. The other side of that would be we would need some way to programmatically do something with those emails and send them somewhere, which would mean a lot of developer time to integrate it into the Hey code base and, you know, try to special case out a job or something. So we needed a different solution. And luckily, we use this very popular piece of software called PostFix, which is just an email receiving program. And we're able to just kind of intercept the email before it reached Hey and shoot it over to Amazon's simple email service. And then once it was in Amazon's simple email service, we could do a whole bunch of other things around, you know, spam detection, file size, sender limits, you know, or sender rules, like we could block people. And then I run some code to do some size checks. I render the email out. We extract out the text or the image that they sent in and basically get that ready so that we can print it. The other component is a Raspberry Pi that is actually on site at the dumpster. It's actually on the ground underneath the printer. A Raspberry Pi is what they call a single board computer. It's a very small, very cheap computer. And it is the interface between like the software world and the real world. We tell the Raspberry Pi, go pull a message, you know, off of the queue up in the cloud. We're able to do some in-person moderation on it, right? Because we don't want to just feed the internet straight into this printer. So every job that goes through gets seen by a person. They are clicking, you know, approve or skip and block this jerk or skip and block all emails from this domain. Once that gets approved, it goes into yet another queue. And there's another loop on the Raspberry Pi that runs continually that says, oh, there's another job I need to print. So I'm going to print it out on the physical printer and I'm going to trigger these relays with some low-level hardware stuff on the Raspberry Pi, and that will start the belt and stop the belt, and it'll also start the fire and stop the fire. That's pretty much what happens.
You can see this on the live stream at hey.science. Adam, Basecamp's marketing designer, was in charge of making a website for this fictional agency, Hurl, that would be the digital home for the dumpster fire and any future projects.
It's like an amalgam of various old operating systems. So like classic Mac operating systems is a heavy influence, a bunch of other older operating systems. Like it's still pixelated, but there's color worked in. What you're looking at is HOS. It's HeyOS. It's our own OS. And so that let me, as I was making the site, make my own rules about how this operating system works. We need unpaid interns at the Hey Email Research Laboratory because we don't have funding. So all the visitors to the website are interns that are helping us conduct these absurd experiments. So you end up on the landing page. You know, you're the portal for the mainframe, which has a couple directories, one of which is the dumpster fire. And then there's another one because there's a glitch in the mainframe where it's a password protected folder, but it's there for some reason. But yeah, when you try to click on it, you get an error message. That'll be a fun little Easter egg thingy as we proceed down the road. And then of course, a about.txt file to give you a little information about what it is that you're looking at.
And of course, no agency branding would be complete without a logo, which you can see as the wallpaper on the site.
It is a envelope shooting on like a rainbow rocket thrust into the stratosphere to your inbox and beyond, basically. But yeah, the fun part of this was like maintaining that pixel aesthetic through all of these assets. So like for both the seal itself and then the little graphic I made for the dumpster fire experiment itself.
Okay, let's go back to the actual dumpster fire. Andy is based in Detroit and describes himself as a wily junk collector in a Rust Belt city. So finding all the pieces of this machine was right up his alley. Step one, get a dumpster.
Detroit hadn't had recycling for decades. And so some Burning Man sort of culture jammer folks started their own out of an old Lincoln factory. A couple of years ago, the city started offering recycling, but this organization is still running. So I texted the owner of it and said, hey, I think out of anyone, you would probably have a spare dumpster, right?
And oh boy, howdy, did this renegade recycling guy have a spare dumpster.
It's still very much a compost dumpster inside. I've crawled inside of it a few times and I regret it every time. The dumpster has had a life before us in the art world. So the previous owners had cut a TV hole in the front because it used to be a can game at a recycling center. You'd throw a can at these targets, and if you hit one, it would like celebrate it on the TV. These kind of moments are going to present themselves to you. You know, this dumpster in this project would not have had a TV in it if we didn't find a dumpster that already had a TV hole. But now that it has a TV hole, we have the opportunity to put videos on there. You know, right now it says 2020 on it, but I stream, you know, YouTube clips on there. We do like window screensavers. You know, it's a fun way to add another layer to the project that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
In addition to being a wily junk collector, Andy has also developed a side hustle of buying and reselling industrial equipment.
The conveyor belt I already had, I bought at auction maybe 10 years ago just to resell it. It was a pill bottle sorter. It would sort the caps for the pill bottles. And I had it listed for sale for 8 of those 10 years, and it never sold. And when I was looking for pieces to do this, it was kind of a Mythbusters moment, like, yeah, let's just use that. Tilt it up. You know, is it perfect? Like, no way. Like, in retrospect, I think a treadmill would have worked better, but this looked cooler. You know, it's all aluminum. It's got like a big red stop button on the side.
Once Andy had all the parts, it was time to call in some experts to put everything together.
But we decided that it needed to be this intentional object. If you're going to have people participate in it, you have to bring at least as much intention as you hope they do when they send you a thing. So, you know, we hired local artists, a local designer, local fabricators to help build this thing. The fabricators that worked on this, there was 3 of them. The leader of the fabricator pack is named Ben Wolf from Ferris Wolf. They normally make, you know, shipping container stuff and big art objects. There was Monica Dubre, who's a local designer who did all of the colors. Eric Froh is an industrial designer who actually figured out the chimney, greenhouse, design? You know, how can we make this look evenly weighted? Josh Bacon is the flame designer. So he actually is one of the heads of safety for fire safety at Burning Man. It was really important to me that the flames would come on because of the action that you did. They would do the thing and then they would go out. I don't want it like burning all day. And so he actually built all of the flame effects for the project.
The Hurl dumpster fire went live on November 24th and it blew up.
Wait, what?
Well, no, not literally. Thank God. But it, let's see. It blew up in the way that things on the internet can go viral.
I don't think you can say viral anymore.
No, everything's ruined. Let's say the dumpster fire got a lot of attention from the start. And it was all a bit much for the video streaming account that the team had set up through IBM. Here's Nathan.
I checked on it when we hit 5,000 viewer hours. And our plan that we were on gave us 100. So we'd already blown past that limit. And I'm like, okay, we can still fix this. Let's bump up to the platinum account, which is a big chunk of change per month. But you get a lot more viewer hours. You get 5,000. And the overages are less than half the price on the silver plan. And then we ended up hitting like 30,000 viewer hours and realized that, you know, doing the math, that's $5,000 in one day. It's a very expensive dumpster fire. So Andy got really quickly behind the, let's move this to Twitch. So we switched the main video feed over to Twitch, but we're still using IBM Video to send out people's clips.
The traffic, the submissions, the public reception has all been incredible. I mean, it 10 out of 10. You know, right now we've got a backlog of almost 2 months of submissions, you know, just over 20,000 submissions, which I would have never expected could be the outcome from this.
With any project that involves a complicated machine, especially one that sits outside and is affected by temperature and wind, there's going to be some troubleshooting. Add in the popularity of an interactive public art project, and there's a lot to keep the Hurl team on their toes.
You know, when we hit the front page of Hacker News, I knew we were going to have people trying to break it. And it was, I think it was minutes into us trending on Hacker News, somebody had figured out how to make a mail loop. And Nathan had it fixed like an hour later.
We had one guy set his reply to email address as dumpsterfire@hay.com. I found out about it when we noticed we had 35,000 emails in our VIP queue. Luckily, I did write tools so that we could strip all those out, and those worked like a charm. One thing that we've been trying to do is speed it up. When we first built it, every print job from, you know, when we pull it out of Amazon's cloud and we start printing it and we send it up the ramp and it gets burned, that would all take 75 seconds for each one. It worked and it was nice and coordinated, but let me check right now. We have 18,391 emails in the queue right now that are waiting to be printed. And that number has only been growing. So we needed to speed this up. So I think I've knocked that down from about 75 seconds down to about 45 or 50 seconds.
And all of this work wasn't just to sell more Hay accounts. Again, here's Adam, Basecamp's marketing designer.
Part of what we wanted to get out of these is that we don't really know what the results are going to be and how people engage with it. And even down to like the environmental consequences in the machine not working right, like those are all like interesting, fun outcomes where it's like this like somewhat controlled chaos. To me, that's what makes it interesting, where it's not just this like kind of static dead thing, but it's this like living organism with everyone participating, and it just makes for really interesting outcomes. The goal here was not specifically about like, ooh, we only count this as a success if we get X number of signups for Hay. Like that's not what this is about at all.
They see this and they go like, what the hell? Like, you guys built all this so I can email a dumpster fire? Like, what is this? You know, and to us, we're going, well, this is way cheaper than paying some media company to say our name, you know, 50,000 times.
It's very refreshing to be able to do things that just wouldn't fly on a website where there's a funnel involved. So like not really caring about any of the conversion stuff and just having it be totally about the experience is very, very refreshing. It's like you're being in a suit all day and you go home and put on your comfy sweat and just like, ah, like I am free to do literally anything, particularly with this project. That's where like silly, fun things like custom scroll bars and custom mouse cursors and things that I absolutely would never, ever, ever do with a, you know, more production-y website.
I've said this several times. It's more fun than I should legally be allowed to have at work.
Nathan is in Kentucky and Adam is in California. So this was a project that came together across time zones and geographies. The dumpster fire itself requires a lot of on-site human supervision in Detroit. Andy has been doing almost all of the content moderation, approving each email that gets printed. Employees of the Detroit Bus Company, the business he started before joining Basecamp and still owns, are also monitoring the operations.
There is always a human standing by ready to hit the big red button to turn off the fire because it is, you know, it is run by 500 gallons of propane in a giant thing called a pig. The paper, though, gets stuck. And so people need tongs to like drop the paper in if it gets jammed up, you know, wind happens. I originally planned for this project to be 24/7. What I wasn't thinking of is that the software can crash. The conveyor can get jammed up. Things happen that need technical intervention. You know, you can't just sit in front of it. So then it was 9 to 9, but that means I was getting here at like 8 and leaving like midnight. That was not so good. What I ended on was 9 to 5. I was like, Basecamp's entire thing is that we get it done in 40 hours a week. If we don't get it done in 40 hours a week, we need to change what we're trying to accomplish. So it runs 40 hours a week, 9 to 5 central. We just run recordings of it throughout the night on the stream. The kind of impact that I was getting from running it 12 hours a day is almost identical to the amount of impact I'm getting running it 8 hours a day. We just got over like 3,200 emails processed through the dumpster. I think I've approved probably 99% of those. I would say that like, I would say it's less than like a quarter of a percent, maybe even less than that of messages that I throw in the garbage can. Like people have been almost universally cool at what they've submitted, and a lot of heartfelt stuff. We've had a lot of people write, you know, things about family members they've lost. There was a marriage proposal. There is, you know, a family that suffered a miscarriage. I mean, there's like people are using this for real catharsis. Like they're, you know, trusting that we're going to handle that information well. So it's that stewardship is important. You know, I don't take that lightly. We were really intentional to not be nihilistic with this. You know, it isn't supposed to be a dark thing, you know, that like nothing matters. It's supposed to be something where like you would have hung out around a bonfire with your friends if you could. Let's have that social experience online. I ran the thing 12 hours on Thanksgiving because I figured it was going to be a hard holiday for people. My parents actually brought me a plate here, and that was one of our biggest stream days. You know, lots and lots and lots of people chatted with me, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours on the thing. I think there's a lot of loneliness out there. Using our marketing bucks to build a cool tool to try to abate some of that, that's a cool mission. I like it.
Andy estimates that the dumpster fire cost around $35,000 to build,
which is like half of moderate engagement with a media company for an ad campaign. So that's like the things that we're not going to get back, like the fabrication expense and the dumpster and the, you know, printer and toner and propane and stuff. There's probably about $20,000 of assets that we could use again, you know, cameras, computers, that'll live on to the next project.
As for the dumpster fire itself,
I would say there's probably two potential futures. One is that it goes to a gallery somewhere. We've had some interest from some art galleries about putting this there and, you know, making it like an enduring project. That'd be a wonderful thing to have happen. And I would not have expected that to be even a potential future. Or the second is that, you know, we make a website for it that people can see what it was, and all of these pieces go off to do something else. You know, either, you know, go into the community. I could see a shipping container is useful for so many things. It's like, I imagine these built objects will go on to lead more lives, doing more weird stuff. You know, once you put that energy into the world, it generally keeps going.
Yeah, Andy has already hit me up, and I've already been sworn to secrecy on a bunch of other ideas that they have. Secret Squirrel Club, activate.
Rework is produced by Sean Hildner and me, Waylon Wong. Music for the show is by Clipart.
If you would like to email the Hurl Dumpster Fire, send your message to dumpsterfire@hay.com. Again, that's dumpsterfire@hay.com. There's a pretty big backlog of emails waiting to be burned, but if you have a hay.com email address, a little pro tip here, you can jump to the front of the line. The Hurl website is at hay.science, and you can watch the live stream at dumpsterfire.email.
There were some other details of how the project came together that we weren't able to include in today's episode, but Andy wrote up a behind-the-scenes post for our company blog, Signal vs. Noise. We'll link to that in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at rework.fm. And now for another installment of our podcast within a podcast, Sean Wick, where Sean reviews a candle and we talk about all things cozy.
Little peek behind the curtain here. We've actually recorded this once before, but there was an issue with the recording. Would you like to recap your story of the illegal moonshine that you made in your fridge?
Oh, I would love to. So I had gotten this apple cider that came from a local farm. I got it at the local butcher's. And I had it once after I took it home, and then I kind of forgot about it. And then yesterday, I thought it would be a nice afternoon, cozy pick-me-up to have a mug of warm apple cider. So I took it out of the fridge, and I noticed that the plastic jug was a bit misshapen at the bottom. When I opened it, it went, you know, like air, a lot of air was coming out. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh no, this is fermenting now. So I gave it a sniff and I couldn't really tell. Like it seemed a little bit more vinegary, but not like it had completely turned. I dumped it into a pot and I heated it up. And the thing just kind of took on a life of its own. It had a lot
started
of...
Started talking to you.
It had a lot of foam on the top that I wasn't expecting. I thought, is this thing just going to grow legs and like walk out of here? But I persisted.
Power through to drink this gross.
When I thought it had reached a good temp, you know, I turned it off. But I am a bad pourer. I cannot pour anything. Mm-hmm. And so then my husband had to come back downstairs. At this point, it's like not even worth it. He's just trying to get work done. And I had to have him come back downstairs to help me pour because he's much better at it. And it had to be done over the sieve and all this stuff. But he poured a little bit too boldly and he made like a huge mess. And now it's like on the counter and it's on the floor. And our kid is trying to do remote school. And she's like, what is going on over there? And we're like, be quiet. Do you want cider or not? I put a little agave in there because I was worried it was going to be too tart. It was fine. I guess I would describe it as fine.
It's so gross. Just throw it out.
I didn't want to waste it.
Well, would you like a little pro tip for the next time you make apple cider?
Oh, I would indeed.
I like to heat mine up in a slow cooker, but you can do this in a pot like you do. Cut an orange in half and take a bunch of cloves. And stick them spiky end first into the outside of the orange, into the peel.
Yeah, yeah.
And they stick in really nice. And it ends up looking a little like a half coronavirus,
which
is great. But it makes it so you're not fishing out and you don't have to strain out all of these tiny little clove pieces. And adds a little citrus and clove along with your cinnamon. Ooh.
Yum.
And then also add quite a bit of bourbon.
Okay, are you going to review a candle?
Yeah. Let's do this super hip candle called Polyamorous.
What a pun. What a pun.
I know, right? By a company called Boy Smells, which is gross.
Did you feel weird buying a candle from a company called Boy Smells?
I did. And I also, it's a, you know, this hip online company. So I get marketing emails daily.
Just
Casey Musgraves. Every time I try to watch a YouTube video, Casey Musgraves is shouting at me to buy different scents.
What a life.
I know.
What does this one smell like? It comes in a fabulously shiny gold jar. Can I have that afterwards to use as a pen holder?
Yeah. Do you want me to empty it out?
I do, because I hate cleaning out candle jars.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
the next time I see you in person, Waylon. So this will be your 2021 present.
I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm going to put so many pens in there.
All right. This one smells like one of those sticky summer evenings. You know, the party's winding down and only the core group is left to polish off that blender full of watermelon margaritas. And y'all can just sit comfortably in silence, enjoying the hot, sweet air that seems to hold everyone close like a warm hug.
Oh, no, thank you. No, I don't like being hot.